So again, we're going to be in the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 14. As you turn there on your Bibles, you know, this is our 10th online service in a row. And one of my biggest fears in life has come to pass today. I was always afraid that I would show up to preach and there will be an empty church. Well, that happened today, except the puppets. But anyway, it's a joke. I know you're at home, and it's great to be here. So Matthew 14, we're going to pick it up on verse 22. But before we start, let me give you a backdrop to our text and put it into context. As we pick up in verse 22, we're going to pick up right after Jesus fed the 5,000. Now, that was 5,000 men plus women and children. So it could have been easily 15,000 or more. But needless to say, it was that great miracle when he took that boy's lunch and he blessed it and broke the bread and the fish and everybody was fed. The disciples were able to pick up 12 baskets afterwards. So with that backdrop to our text, we're going to pick it up in Matthew 14, verse 22. It says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Now, I want to have, if you will, this morning, a backdrop, a parenthetical thought that I want you to carry along today during this sermon. That is, we have to remember, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. They didn't do it on their own. They were told by Jesus to get onto the boat. Just keep that in mind, because as we're going to learn this, and perhaps some of us know the story, there is this concept, this perception, this thought, this idea that when we are doing what God tells us to do, things are just smooth and easy and perfect. You wake up in the morning and your breath is like mint and your hair is perfect. You don't even have to brush your hair. Your smile is like diamonds in there that just glare, and people have to wear sunglasses. Oh, because I'm walking with Jesus, everything's perfect. That is not true. In fact, Jesus said quite the opposite, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But keep that parenthetical thought that Jesus tells his disciples or made them get into the boat, go before them to the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. So, verse 23, when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now, when evening came, he was alone there. So let's just put this in real time. He just performed a massive miracle, which is 5,000 men plus women and children fed. His disciples got to see that, pick up 12 baskets left over. And right after that great move of God and that miracle, he takes off on his own to pray. Now, in 2020 or the 21st century, you would think that after God does a mighty work through somebody or like that, like a miracle of feeding so many people, you would think that afterwards there will be like interviews, you know, and sign autographs, and you will, you know, book a book contract and maybe star a movie because you want to talk about what happened. But not so with Jesus. Jesus lets his disciples go, tells him, you go. And he goes to himself to pray. Jesus often withdrew himself to pray. He will pray before the morning. He would pray during the day, as we just see at night. He would pray. He was often praying. And, you know, as Pastor Bill often says here from the pulpit, prayer is the work. If Jesus himself had the need of praying all the time, how much more should we? Not only that, I have to wonder, what was he praying for? Did he perhaps pray for all those souls that just got a free meal? And the parents and the kids and so forth? Was he praying for their journey past that? Was he praying for the disciples or for what they were about to encounter? Did he pray for Peter? When Peter, as we're going to learn, stepped out, what was he praying for? I would venture to say he probably prayed for all that and more. But needless to say, he was just connecting with God after a great move of God. It was like so vital for him, so essential. And I think in these times, more than ever, we should be those who are Always praying. 1 Thessalonians 5:17. What does Paul say? Pray without ceasing. We're to be walking, driving, eating, and constantly just be praying, drawing from the Lord, being in connection with our Father. So Jesus went to him by himself to a mountain, and he prayed. And when evening came, he was alone there. Verse 24. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Again, why are they in the boat? Because Jesus made them get in there. And now as Jesus is praying up on the hill, on the water, things start getting choppy. The water starts getting choppy. The wind starts picking up. The waves start crashing against the boat. And we have to remember, Jesus made them get into the boat. Did Jesus know what was going to happen? Of course he did. But you see, back to my main parenthetical thought in the beginning of the service, is like we have to remember Jesus told them to be there. Because see, by this time, I'm sure the disciples are wondering, what is happening here? We saw the miracle. Jesus made us get in here. Now he's not here with us. And things are getting choppy. And the wind is picking up. And what are we going to do? See, sometimes you have to come to a place. You just have to, like my old pastor used to say in California, when you come to a place that you don't know, you fall back on what you do know. So what do they know at this point? All they know is that Jesus told them to get into the boat. That's all they know. And that's what they have to fall back on. Why are we here? Because Jesus told us to get into the boat. Why? We'll know why. Let him figure that out. But in the meantime, as things are getting a little choppy and things are getting unraveled, Jesus told us to be here. And that's something that we have to always keep in mind, especially in the world that we live in today. What is happening? Jesus is with us. Jesus told us to be here for such a time as this, for this season. Jesus told us to be here. So, you know, again, in John 16:33, Jesus says, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Be in this world you will have tribulation. Again, the Christian journey, the walk of faith, is not one of just easy sailing. Jesus told us, in this world you will have tribulation. Don't be so shocked when tests and trials and pandemics and stock markets crashing. Don't be so shocked. I told you beforehand, in this world there will be tribulation, but I, be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. I got this under control. So, verse 25, now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. Now the fourth watch is between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So if you play this in real time, remember when he did the miracle, it was getting late. So it was the early evening. Now he's coming to them in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. So it could be that the disciples were on that boat for close to 9 hours, perhaps more, with the wind blowing and things getting choppy. I'm sure they were exhausted. I'm sure they were emotionally drained. Does that sound like us today? Are you emotionally drained of being home, of not seeing the normal for 2 months? Are you exhausted? I have been. I am. I'm done. And he comes to them walking on the sea. I have to read this quote to you. As I was studying this, I got this quote from Warren Wiersbe. It says, "Why did Jesus walk on water? To show his disciples that the very thing they feared, the sea, was just a staircase for him to come to them." Boom. I actually have that on my notes. Boom. The waves chopping, the wind picking up. Jesus is like, "I'm using what is happening around you to make my way to you." And we have to think like this. If you look at the data and you look at the people that have gotten saved and they're returning to Jesus due to this pandemic, you will be very surprised and encouraged. I heard, like, when Greg Laurie did his Easter service, close to 3,000 people got saved through the online service. I heard a story about this atheist who just saw a link on Facebook and clicked and heard the message and got saved, and he wrote back. I've heard of people coming back to Jesus and taking their life seriously. So God is using, obviously, very tangibly, this wave of sickness in our world to make his way into the hearts of many. So sometimes we don't want the waves. Sometimes we don't want the wind. Sometimes we want easy, smooth, still waters. But it is in those situations that God makes his way back to us. And you have to think how many people have come to Christ due to this. I had it in my mind earlier. When would Samaritan Spurs, Franklin Graham's ministry, be able to put a hospital in Central Park, New York? And what other circumstance? Probably none other than this one. Yet people were ministered to in Jesus' name. So God has opened doors. Jesus came to them walking on the sea, walking on the very thing that was troubling them, walking, using that as a channel, a conduit to get to his disciples that we're going to learn were very scared. Verse 26, it says, "And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, 'It's a ghost.' And they cried out for fear." So 9 hours or more being tossed by the wind, chopped up. They see Jesus walking and they say, "It's a ghost." And I just have to imagine, what would that look like? You have 12 men in a boat just freaking out and saying, "It's a ghost." And it says, they cried out for fear. In the middle of their test, their trial, their storm, they were no doubt tired and emotionally exhausted and freaked out. But we must remember that even though we're living currently as a world, as a nation, as a county, as a city, as a people, we're living through a very choppy season, very violent waters. We have to remember that God remains in control. We have to remember that, as Pastor Bill often says, things are not falling apart. Things are falling into place. I have it here in my notes, a verse that I go to often. There was Job going through the trial of a lifetime when he lost everything, his health, and he has his friends telling him to repent, and he's done nothing wrong. What does Job says in Job 19:25? He says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. When you hear the economy crashing, I know my Redeemer lives. When you hear the pandemic and the spike is coming, I know my Redeemer lives and he will stand on the earth. When you hear that there's no jobs, I know my Redeemer lives. You and I as Christians, we get to say, "I know my Redeemer lives and he will stand on the earth." He's in control. He's not moved. He's not worried. He is secure. He knows exactly how everything is going to pan out, just like Jesus did when he sent those guys on the boat. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He saw the outcome. God sees the outcome of all this. And we have to remember, people, dear saint, dear Christian, we know that our Redeemer lives. Not lived, not will live, lives in real time today. And he is able to heal, to intervene. And we are in this season that, think about like the 9 hours or so, getting chopped, getting roughed up, getting repentant and so forth. We know our Redeemer lives. Write it down on a piece of paper, or highlight it somewhere in your Bible. Get a tattoo on your forehead. No, I'm kidding. That was a joke. Don't get a tattoo on your forehead. Get it somewhere where you can just look at that. When the waves start picking up, he says, "I know my Redeemer lives." We have a hope. We have a hope that is an anchor to our soul. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But he says, verse 27, "But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid.'" Notice the pattern. Jesus is like, "Be of good cheer," or "Be happy, relax. It's me. Don't be afraid." See, when you hear Jesus say, "It is I," I got this. Jesus is telling his disciples, "Hey, don't worry, it's me. It's me. The miracle worker, the one that just fed all those thousands of people, it's me, I'm here. No need to be afraid. No need to be like worried about things." Fear paralyzes us. Fear causes us to freak out. Fear causes us to go nuts. Last night, or yesterday, with all this rain that we had in Texas, like 24 hours of rain, we cleaned the house. My wife and I were cleaning and purging things and just kind of setting things in order. So our kids were restless, and at the end of the day, they wanted to play hide and go seek. So how we play hide and go seek is they go hide, and I walk around and stomp. And I say, "Where are you?" I have this deep voice. "I will find you, and I will tickle you." I do this stuff. And my four-year-old, Sela, before it started, she's like, "Daddy, can I be on your team?" I'm like, "No." But then I repented, and I let her be on my team. So anyway, my two older ones, Cambria and Ela, are hiding. And I start doing my stomping through the house, and my voice, "I will find you, and I will tickle you." And something that's never happened happened. They both ran out of their hiding places and came to me. And I said, "What happened?" They go like, "We were afraid." And in that moment, the Lord, like, put in my heart, I believe it. He's like, "This is a teachable moment." So we talked for about 2 minutes or three. And I said, "Kids, listen to this. Fear will cause you to melt. Fear will cause you to give up. Fear will cause you to just," like I said in the earlier service, "melt. We are not to be afraid. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Of whom shall I be afraid?" So that was a teachable moment. But fear, which is so prevalent right now in our world, fear has a way of just take it, draining our faith, draining our hope, and just causing us to freak out, much like this guy's. And you might be watching today, and you may not be a Christian, and you may be afraid, or you may be a prodigal, and you may be terrified of everything that's happened. You may be terrified of the stock market. You may be terrified of the economy and jobs and food lines and meat shortages. You may be afraid of a lot of things. Fear paralyzes, but we are not to fear, because we know our Redeemer lives. We know he's in control. So, verse 28, and Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So here we see a little bit of Peter's natural tendencies to be like, "Hey, is that really you, Jesus? Okay, well, make me walk on water. And if you're really here, Jesus, then let me walk on water. Let me check out what you're doing." So verse 29. It says, "So he said, Jesus, come. And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus." So Jesus, in the storm, tells Peter, "Come." I want you to tune in right now. Jesus always, 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 he's always inviting us to come to him. Always. Isaiah 55:1, "Oh, everyone that thirsts, come to the waters. He and who you who have no money, come, buy and eat." Matthew 11:28-30, you probably know this. "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light." Are you weary today? Are you done? Are you tapping? Are you saying, I can't? Jesus says, "Come to me, you who are weary, you who are afraid in your living room right now, you who are terrified in that garage, you who are just paralyzed by fear, come to me. Learn of me. My yoke is easy," Jesus would say. "My burden is light." There in John 7:37-38, on the last day, it says, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. And he who believes in me, as the scriptures has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." Jesus says, "Come. Come. You don't have to face this storm, this pandemic, this season on your own." Jesus says, "Come. Come to me." Verse 30, "But when he saw," this is Peter, "when he saw that the wind was boisterous or violent, he was afraid and began to sink. he cried out saying, Lord, save me. Peter was no doubt looking at Jesus as he was walking. Otherwise, how would he know where he is? He was looking at him. But when he saw that the waves, the wind started picking up and they were violent, he no doubt, he took his eyes off Jesus because he saw the things and he was afraid and he began to sink. Peter took his eyes off of Jesus. He feared and he began to sink. Before 2020 came around, back about 7 months ago, I was telling a couple of my friends, I wonder how many ministries and churches and so forth are going to name, 2020 the year of vision. And that was kind of like a joke. But the more I see what this 2020 has been like, the last 5.5 months, I think is the year, not of vision, but the year of eyes on Jesus, eyes on the Lord. The year of looking to the Lord, because it has been a very trying time for all of us, not some, all of us. So Jesus took his eyes, Peter took his eyes off of Jesus, and he was overcome by fear, and he began to sink. You see that pattern? Take your eyes off of Jesus, fear comes in, and you sink. So, what are your eyes focused on? What are you paying attention to? Are you focused on the news? Are you focused on Netflix, Facebook, Instagram? Are you focused on the government and what they tell you? Are you focused on the governor, the judges, the sheriffs? Are you focused on your 401k? Are you focused on the stock market, your bank account? What are you focused on? Focus on Jesus. Keep your eyes on Jesus. If when Peter looked at everything that was going around him, he began to sink. When we keep our eyes on men, when we keep our eyes even on pastors, when we keep our eyes on things that affect our daily lives, we are going to sink. We're going to be afraid. We're going to freak out. We have to keep our eyes on Jesus. With my daughter, my 7-year-old daughter, was born, we had to do an emergency trip to the hospital, and it was an emergency C-section. And I'll spare you all the details, but let me just tell you, within a minute or two, things changed very rapidly in that hospital room. And my wife was gone to the OR, and I was left there in that room by myself. 3 a.m. or so. Not knowing what was going to happen, the thoughts going through my head, 100 miles an hour. What? Am I going to have a daughter? Am I going to have a wife? Am I going to have none? Am I going to have both? What's going to happen? So I texted a friend of mine, another pastor, and I told him da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, he texted me back. The simplest text. But until this day, I hold on to that text. He said, eyes on the Lord, bro. That's all he said. Now, I knew that. But at that time, in that choppy moment of my life, when he sent that text and came through, it was like eyes on Jesus. That's all. And needless to say, you know Cambria, you know my wife, so you know everything turned out just perfect. But we have to keep our eyes on Jesus. We can't keep our eyes on anything else. We will sink. One more story, and I'm almost done with my stories. But I coached my son's soccer team. I was an assistant coach. I was there. And he was playing defense. And Eli and I, we had this thing. I said, Eli, I'm going to run the defense. You look at me. Eyes on me. And I will do this sign to him. Eyes on me. Eyes on me. Eyes on me. And as the game started, and I was lined up with Eli, we had rehearsed it so many times that I just went like this. And he knew exactly. I would tell him when to stop, when to run, go forward, cut the play, and so forth. I feel like that's what the Lord is telling us today. Eyes on me, Raul. Eyes on me, Calvary Chapel. Eyes on me, church. Eyes on me, world. Eyes on me, depressed saint. Eyes on me. I got this. I'm not worried. I'm not moved, the Lord would say. This didn't catch me by surprise as it did to the disciples on the water. I knew what was going to happen. I have complete control over all this. Last time I checked, everything as I planned it is going according to plan. Eyes on me. Eyes on me. Eyes on me. So what? Where are your eyes? Where are you focused on? Let me read to you Psalm 121. I'll read it to you. Just listen. This is one of my favorite psalms, but it's so powerful and so encouraging to me. It says, Psalm 121, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. For whence comes my help? My help comes from the stock market. Oh, no. My help comes from the government. No, sorry, I borrowed Kendall's Bible for this. I'm kidding, Kendall, I did not. My help comes from the Lord, who made the heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your going out and coming in from this day forth and even forevermore. This psalm was saying, it's a psalm of ascents. That was saying as they went up to Zion, to Jerusalem, those three times a year for the feast. And that's what they would say. I will look up to the mountains. I will look up to the Lord. That's where my help is. My help is from the Lord, not from my employment, not from whatever is out there to give me help. My help ultimately comes from Jesus. That's it. There's nowhere else I need to go, nowhere else I need to be, no one else I need to call. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of the heaven and the earth. He is in complete control. Now, the second part there of verse 30 says, he began to sink. And beginning to sink, he cried out saying, Lord, save me. The shortest, probably the shortest prayer recorded. Not very theology, you know, deep, and it was just three words, Lord, save me. Even in the middle of the storm, even as Peter took his eyes off of Jesus and looked around, even then, Peter knew, if anybody's going to help me here, it's the Lord, because he's using the very trial. He's walking all over it. Lord, help me. Maybe there's somebody watching this and saying, I am so afraid. I need God to help me. You're okay. It's okay. Maybe somebody out there says, saying, this fear, all these thoughts, all these things have just crippled me so hard. I have lost hope. I have lost faith. I'm just tapping. I'm done. Lord, help me. Lord, save me. You can do that. We can cry out to him. Last time I checked, the throne of heaven is open 24/7. It has not shut down. Coronavirus may have shut down churches, but not the throne of grace, that we may find grace to help in time of need. Last time I checked, Hebrews 7:25, Jesus ever lives to make intercession for us. Last time I checked, he has a plan to give us a future and a hope. Last time I checked, he keeps this world spinning. Last time I checked, he keeps the oceans in place. Last time I checked, he has oxygen for you and me. Last time I checked, he's in control. Last time I checked his word, he's coming back. Last time I checked, he's not moved. Last time I checked, he's secure. Last time I checked, when I read Revelation, we win. There'll be a new world, a new earth, a new kingdom, a new everything. There'll be no sickness. Last time I checked, he's in control. Lord, save me, Peter called. We get to say that today. Lord, help me. Lord, save me. Lord, lift me up. Lord, pull me out of this sinking hole that I am, that is just drowning me. And he's there. It's real. It's right out of our very mouth. Lord, help me. This hope, Hebrews 6:19 says, we have as an anchor to the soul, both secure and steadfast. Jesus is not moved. The hope of heaven, the hope of salvation, the hope of forgiveness of sins is an anchor to our soul. I like to picture in my mind as though this boat that these disciples were on had a big, long chain, a heavy anchor down at the bottom, that even though the waves were blowing them side to side, it could only blow them so far because the anchor was holding them from going out. We have a hope that is an anchor to the soul. We have Jesus. Last time I checked, he's on the throne. Last time I checked, we can call to him. Last time I checked, he's like bold as a lion, the lion of the tribe of Judah. He is not worried. And as his kids, we need not worried. We can just trust him. And it says, and immediately, verse 31, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Did Jesus say, "Peter, why are you doubting?" No. He says that immediately he reached out and pulled him up. Immediately. When we call to Jesus, it's immediate. It's like he hears us. It's like it's open there. And immediately he reached and pulled him out. And what does Jesus tell him? "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Dear saint, don't doubt God right now. You don't have to. When this pandemic is gone and this whole thing is over, be one that says, "I didn't doubt God. I knew he was in control." You don't have a reason to doubt. Don't doubt. He's there. He's in control. And I can't wait to see, I really believe this with my heart, what will come after from all this. He is in complete control. "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, it says the wind ceased. He is in complete control. Eyes on Jesus. You prodigals watching, eyes on Jesus. You probably are thinking and have been thinking, "I need to get back. I need to get back to church. I need to get back to Jesus. I messed up my life so hard. I've done so many things. I can't." You, Jesus is saying, eyes on me. Don't doubt. Come to me. You, mom, dad, grandpa, who are sinking in despair, in anxiety, even this morning, and saying, "What will happen?" The Lord will say, not me, the Lord will say to you, "Don't doubt. Don't doubt. Have faith. I'm here." And you, lost soul, who perhaps before this pandemic, you wanted to do nothing with God, but now you've been thinking. And you've been thinking hard about this Jesus. You, Jesus is saying, "Come. Bring me your sin. Bring me your mess. Bring me everything that's troubling you. Let me give you a new life, a new hope. Let me give you an eternal home in heaven. Don't doubt." If Jesus said, there in Luke 9:23, if any man will come after me, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Yield yourself to him. His invitation stands. His invitation stands. You come. You don't delay. So it says I want to talk to three groups of people before we close. It'll be very quick, but I really do. I want to talk to the saints. I want to talk to the lost. I want to talk to the prodigals like I just did. And I want to pray for you. I don't know what's all going on in your house. I know what goes on in my house. And then some days that we feel great, and some days we're just over this. Some days a wave of thoughts and crazy things comes into our minds, and some days we don't think about them. But I know everybody's on this boat, if you will, together. But I want to talk to the Christian. Christian, hang in there. Eyes on Jesus. Don't doubt. And I want to pray for you, Christian. I want to pray for you right now. And wherever you are, in your living room, in your kitchen, in your patio, maybe you're watching on your phone in a closet, wherever you are, I want you to pray with me right now. And we're going to ask God to just lift this pain and this anxiety and this sadness and just kick it out of your mind and heart and house and then give you that renewed hope. So Jesus, I pray right now, whoever might be, however many at home right now that are feeling just down and they're troubled and they're freaking out and they're scared, I pray, Lord, that whoever they are, you know them. Lord, that you just instill a sense of that shalom peace upon their lives, that they may sense your presence fill the room they're in right now, and that they'll know in their heart of hearts that things will be just fine because you are on the throne. I commit them to you, the young, the old, the mom, the dad, the single parent, the grandparent, the child, whoever they might be. I put them in your hands and I ask that you give them that peace and that hope and that faith that they need right now. I want to talk to now the lost. The one that says, I don't understand about Jesus. I just know I'm afraid. The one that says, how does this work? The one that says, I'm a good person. Or I'm a really bad person. The one who says, what do I do? I want to talk to you and tell you, Jesus is calling you home. He's calling you to him. He wants to give you life. He wants to give you eternal salvation. He wants to give you a future and a hope. He wants to redeem the years the locust has eaten. He wants to rewrite your story and make you a trophy of his grace. All you have to do, like Peter did, is say, Lord, save me. So if that's you, wherever you are, let's pray, Jesus. I pray for whoever that may be. That Lord, right now, they will just say the words, Lord, save me. And I pray you save. And I pray you touch, you restore, you renew, you create new creations. I pray, Lord, that these souls that are seeking you even today will find you in a way only that you can only make yourself known to them. I pray you save. And lastly, I want to talk to the prodigals because the Lord put this in my heart. There are prodigals watching this right now. And I don't know who you are, but I know you're a prodigal because the Lord would not put this in my heart unless there were somebody, okay? And prodigals, because I was one of them, we have, when you do something bad, we have this guilt that weighs us down and sinks us, if you will, to the bottom. And it's like, how could we? If they only knew what I did. I can't believe I messed up. I knew better. And that guilt keeps you from coming to Jesus. Let me tell you something, friend. Those lies are from the pit of hell, meant to keep you there and to let you just be lost forever. You don't have to believe those lies. Some people may say, oh, but I messed up so many times. Let me clean up my act. And I'll come to God. And God is quite the opposite. He's like, bring me your mess. I have a great trash disposal. Garbage disposal. I can get rid of all your trash. I can, with my blood, I can cleanse you. Bring the mess. I will restore the locust, the years the locust has eaten. I will restore those relations. I'll restore you, redeem you. I will restore unto you the joy of your salvation when you come back. So prodigal, whoever you are and wherever you are, whatever might be going on through your head right now, Jesus is saying, come, eyes on me. So let's pray for those prodigals. Jesus, I pray for whoever those or that or however many prodigals are watching this right now. It could be a prodigal in heart. It could be a prodigal, very bad person. I don't know. But you know who they are. And I pray right now that you will just bring him back. That they'll remember how grace is so vast and available for them. How you died on the cross to redeem them. How, Lord, that they will know that you will restore the joy of their salvation, that you will cleanse them, that you will raise mighty men and women for you, that you will restore, that you will save, that you cleanse, that you rebuild, that you change, that you heal, Lord, those prodigals. I pray, Jesus, that you restore family unity even right now. So prodigals, lost ones, dear saints, I pray you pray with me. I pray your eyes are steadfast on Jesus. I pray that in the most amazing, tangible way, you will just do what Jesus did and pray often. And make your closet, your coffee table, wherever you read, you pray, a holy place where you can just tap into that resource and navigate this storm. Because I tell you, the storm will pass. Jesus will come through. Things will come back. We don't know what it will look like, but we know for sure at the end, he's on the throne. So I pray, whoever you are, if you're a prodigal, if you're a new Christian, email us. I didn't tell this to the first group in the morning, but email us. We want to send you a booklet. And this booklet is just basically says, welcome to the family of God. We want to mail this to you tomorrow. You can email us at info@loveneverfails.com. It's not to ask you for anything. We won't ask you for a dime. We won't put you in an email list, nothing. It's just so that you can have some tools as you begin this new journey with your maker. And if you're a prodigal too, so you can just go back to, you know, your first love. So I, with all gratitude and privilege, I say thank you for tuning in. We look forward to next Wednesday as we are.